check session number 28645, reel 18.
And then we come into the period that we've covered.
Yes.
Would you like to move now? We've spent 65 minutes extra time on the period before before and during the war, which you've been describing. Are you ready now to get on the boat with Captain Brown?
Yes. Why not? Yes, what was I thinking about him before you came? He was the premier captain of the fleet. I didn't say that, but he was the alpha captain of the castle fleet. A very good man. I can't say that of very many people. But they're thoroughly good. Are we recording?
We are.
I remember he, when I was going to leave the ship at Durban, he wanted to give me his Bible, which was a lovely little thing, bound in Morocco leather, and it was a small one. And he said he wanted me to have it. And I refused to take it because my conscience said to me, you are not good enough to possess that Bible. And it's been a regret to me ever since that I didn't take it, because I had no idea how much I was going to hurt him by refusing. And I refused on absolutely sound grounds, because I thought I wasn't, I decided I just wasn't a good enough character to own such a thing. And he thought it was a lack of trust and friendship. It's very sad. I was very sorry about that. However, there it was. So we, oh yes, the journey. Oh. Well, as I said, I was half an hour late. However, I was soon on board. And the first thing he did was to say, you've not got a good cabin, you're going over the other side, because going down the Red Sea, you have to be on the right side or else you get boiled by the sun. So he changed my cabin for me straight away, and of course I was at the captain's table. And that was fine. We went down the Red Sea, and that was lovely, and we saw those beautiful big fish, and with dolphins, and flying fish came on board, and I don't know how they managed to get on board the Cape Town Castle. It was quite a tall ship. But they did. And then we spent our time hanging over the side and watching these beautiful fish. And then we got to... Oh. What's the port you call in the first one down on the east side of Africa?
Mombasa.
We approached Mombasa. Now, we had at the captain's table a perfectly obnoxious colonel. And his great sport was to make snide remarks to me and tease me in a very nasty way. He was a most unpleasant man. So as we approached Mombasa, he said, of course you won't be able to go ashore because you haven't had an injection for yellow fever. So I said, well, that's all right. I shan't go ashore. That's fine. Oh, but then they'll probably make you have it, and so on and so forth. Anyway, they didn't make me have it, and I didn't go ashore. So I watched everybody go ashore in Mombasa, and that was fine. All soldiers trooped off. I and two nurses, we were the only women on board. One of them was an absolute angel. Oh, she was a nice girl, my goodness. And she had She was absolutely without false respect. And I emphasize the word false because, yes, she respected otherwise, but we were in the lift with the captain and she sort of whipped his cap off and tried it on and laughing. And she was, you couldn't take any exception to anything she did, Margaret. She was so lovely. And the captain loved her too, and I mean in the right way. And he never got cross with her. She was wonderful, and she was wonderful afterwards. I mention her particularly. So everybody trooped off except us. We didn't. And they came back, and of course they'd had a great time, and they got drunk, or medium drunk, and they came back with enormous baskets of fruit. And they all loaded on board with these baskets of fruit. And of course, there was only one layer of fruit. But nobody thought to inspect them. And they carry these baskets off to their cabin. Well, about 10 o'clock at night, things started to happen. And these extremely drunk men started to pour out of their cabin. So the captain got a posse of officers together to try and round them up and pop them back in their cabins and lock them up. So they would get onto one deck, the posse, and they'd be about to try and arrest some of these people. And they disappeared over the side, if you please, and they were climbing up and down the outside of the ship in extreme danger, clinging onto anything they could get hold of. Talk about the Lord looking after the drunks. The ship was literally crawling with people on the outside of the ship. It was an extraordinary sight. Well, finally they all got so drunk that they began dropping off and we had to fish them out of the water. And gradually they got so bemused that they started to stagger back to their cabins along long corridors covered with broken bottles. So the next thing we know is we are called to help. The captain rounds the three of us up and says, we've got a whole lot of men with cut feet. They'd all been traipsing back to their cabins over these broken bottles, and we spent the rest of the night bandaging feet. It really was an extraordinary night. But how those men didn't all drop off the ship and drown, I don't know. And every time they managed to round up some on one deck, they'd rush up the main staircase, the posse would rush up the staircase to catch them, and they'd be over the side and down to the other deck, or up to the boat deck. It was an extraordinary night, quite extraordinary. Most of them were in bed next day. There was peace and quiet. And we duly sailed on, and when we got to Durban, we were met by the White Lady, who always sang the ships in. Do you know about the White Lady?
I don't.
Oh, doesn't anybody know about the White Lady? She was a very bosomy type. She was about 6 feet tall. She was a very noble sight. And she used to sing every troop ship in.
Black or white?
White. And every troop she received on the quayside and sang the ship in. She had a good voice too. So she welcomed us in, and there we were in Durban. Now what I did actually in Durban, I haven't an idea. I met another troop ship that had some friends on board. I met them. And then, where I stayed I can't remember. I've no idea, but I caught the next convenient train to Johannesburg. I saw my only wild animals from that train. I saw a troop of gazelles going along beside the train. Anyhow, got to Johannesburg and I stayed at the Victoria Hotel, where you could stay for 10 shillings a night. And I didn't know this, of course, but it was a den of the South African Mafia. And there was a particular family of mafia. There were seven brothers, and they were known as the Seven Black Brothers. And they were an absolute menace, and they held court in the reception hall of the Victoria Hotel. And the place was absolutely full of mafia, and people were making fortunes. You could buy shares for a shilling one day, and they'd be a pound the next, and they'd be £10 the next. They were if I'd had some money then, I'd have been a millionaire. It was absolutely incredible what went on at the Victoria Hotel, including prostitution. So one night the police said enough is enough, and they decided to raid the hotel and clear out the prostitutes. So they duly raided the hotel, and that night I'd had dinner with a person I'd made friends with, and thoroughly upright man, he was perfectly all right. And when the things got a bit noisy in the reception room, we decided to go up to my room and have a drink, which we duly did, perfectly innocent drink. And we heard this kerfuffle going on in the corridors, and terrible noise, screams and shrieks, and people being hauled about. And I said, for goodness sake, what on earth's happening? So then the next thing was, we had beating on my door, and in they came, and they looked a bit startled because we were sitting very, very neatly on two separate chairs and obviously just enjoying a drink. So then they apologized profusely and said, we're so sorry, obviously you aren't what we're after, but what we're doing is we're clearing out the prostitutes. They were finding them under the cupboards and in the cupboards and in the bars and everywhere you can possibly imagine. They were hauling these women out and herding them to the police station. What a to-do. But I was surprised because they took one look at me and decided I wasn't. Nor was I. So that was quite exciting. And the Black Brothers were always getting up to something. And I knew, this man knew a small group of people. I wasn't allowed out of the hotel on my own. He said, on no account are you to walk in the streets on your own, because you won't come back. And the great thing was dog racing in those days in Johannesburg. The dogs were great. And the mafia used to go in force to the dog racing and do all the things you can imagine they would be doing, cheating and so on and so forth. And this man went with me, and he stuck to me like glue, because our whole group got roaring drunk. Not one of them could have seen me home. And he, good man, he didn't, and he saw me home safely. But that was quite an experience as well. Extraordinary life. There were murders every day. And you simply didn't dare walk the streets alone. So I stayed there for a while. It was quite interesting, one way and another. And then I took the blue train to Cape Town. That was interesting. And I visited some people in the... I was invited to visit people. They had that section of the city which was lovely bungalows and things, and they were fenced off from the rest of the city. It was a white enclave at that time, and they had sort of protected fences, electric fences even then. So I arrived in Cape Town, and I met a journalist, a South African journalist I'd met in Egypt. He met me and installed me in a hotel, then he disappeared. So that was fine. I met his wife once, and she disappeared. So I was on my own.
To what extent was... This is before the nationalist government came to power, of course.
Oh, yes.
But to what extent was the apartheid system in evidence?
It wasn't in evidence.
Wasn't in evidence.
Not as far as I was concerned. I mean, I just went and stayed in my hotel. There weren't any blacks in the hotel, but I didn't register that. I mean, I didn't expect any blacks. No, it really was apartheid. I mean, you weren't conscious of it. Not as a visitor, you weren't. They were just separate, and you didn't go around snuffling around to try and find somebody who was separated. You just lived the life that was in front of you, which was a white life. Chance whether it was mafia or not, but it was white. So then I wandered about Cape Town, and I went up Table Mountain, and I walked down Table Mountain. I got told off thoroughly because they said that was very dangerous indeed. I shouldn't have walked on my own down Table Mountain. However, I came to no harm. And I went and inspected the docks because they were interesting. Somebody said good afternoon to me, so I said good afternoon. And it was a couple of Poles who were there with the Polish ship. And they said, oh, you must come and see our ship. So, nothing loath, off I went to see their ship. And I spent the evening with them. They were very nice. But I did things like that, and I never came to any harm. And one of them made the most marvellous flowers out of shells. Beautiful work. Absolutely lovely. So I enjoyed that very much. I did the docks. Then I took a bus. You couldn't hire a car. You weren't allowed to have the petrol because it was so near the wall. So I took a bus to Hout Bay. And I saw a flower on the way up on a bank. And I have never heard of it since or seen it since. And nobody I've ever spoken to about it knows what it is. It was like a small gladiolus, like one of those wild ones, those wild pink ones, you know. The only thing was, it was gentian blue. And it was up on this bank, and we whizzed past it in the bus. I could have wept. It was dreadful. Never seen it again. Never heard of it. Never anything. I don't know what it was. I have seen a purple one in Syria. They're pretty rare, growing in a cornfield, but a blue one, no. So I got a Hout Bay and I decided to take a walk. Then I heard some very curious sounds. It was a rather unpleasant roaring. I walked for a bit further, about another 10 minutes, and then I thought, no, this is really getting very frightening. I think I'll go home. So I turned around and went back, and I was told afterwards it was a very good thing I did, because it was a troop of baboons, and they're very dangerous. So it was just as well I headed for home. I went to Meisenberg, I went to the vineyards.
In the Paul River?
No, Stellenbosch.
In Stellenbosch.
Mm. And then I went back to Johannesburg and Durban. I bought all the things for my husband's third daughter's wedding, all the materials to make up her trousseau. And I got a lot of materials for my husband and my father to make suits, because we hadn't any. And they had all you wanted in South Africa. Oh, and I visited the monkeys in Durban. It was very interesting visiting the monkeys, because they knew what glass was. Now, they're the only animal I know that knows what glass is. They got onto the bonnet of the car, and instead of trying to come through the windscreen, they reached over it. It was one of those open windscreens. And they reached over it, so they knew it was there. But most animals can't see glass. I thought that was interesting.
What was the purpose of your visit down to Cape Town and South Africa?
Just because I'd got very fond of the troops, the South African troops, and I wanted to see their country. And it was a beautiful country, what I saw there. So, that was that. So I got back to Durban, so then I had to get back to Egypt. And that was no joke, because there wasn't any transport, believe it or not. And so then I went to see Captain Brown's brother, who was in charge of the navigation office in Durban. So he said he'd see what he could do. He said, I can't send you alone on a ship, on a commercial ship, because that's not allowed, so I'll have to find somebody else who wants to go to Egypt as well. Anyhow, he found somebody, a very nice girl, and got us a passage on a Kola, which was a Sam ship. And we had to get to Mombasa to board it. So we got on this lovely train, which did about 20 miles an hour. And we tootled up from Durban to Mombasa. And you could see all the flowers on the way, and we went through the jungle, and we saw all these beautiful flowers, and the train kept stopping, and the engine driver kept getting out and going to the nearest stream to get some water for the engine to drink. Then we do another 100 miles, and so on and so forth. And we got very friendly, this girl and I. We really took to each other, so we had a great time. And we got to Mombasa. And we went down to the docks, on principle, to get on our ship. And there it was, up at the quayside, and a load of coal trucks was beside it. And they were loading the coal by picking up the trucks and tipping them upside down into the hold. So the ship, of course, was black. It was a terrible sight. Oh, dear, oh, dear. So we turned tail and found somewhere to stay for the night while they finished doing this. And when they'd washed the ship down, we got onto it. And we were just the two passengers. And I steered the ship a good whole of the halfway back to Egypt. It had an open wheelhouse, so you could steer the ship under the stars or the moonlight as you pleased. It had an open bridge. It was one of the first Sam ships. It was lovely. I did enjoy that. My goodness, I did enjoy that. The feel of a heavy ship under your hand and steering it is so gorgeous. Absolutely wonderful. It was just an ordinary steering wheel of the old sort. You could feel every reaction of the ship to what you did. It's beautiful. The man who was on duty for steering used to go and sit in the stern and smoke and watch my wake and make sure I was doing it properly. I became quite a good steerswoman. So that was fine. And every